Tonight we are looking together at the scriptures in Genesis chapter 1. And as we look through Genesis, we're noticing that we're getting a full vision of our great and glorious God. And in the passage that we're in tonight, in fact, really kind of finishing up what we started to look at last week in Genesis chapter 1, focusing on God, the great designer. And tonight we're going to focus more specifically on verses 6 through 13, days 2 and 3 of creation. But we also see in those days that God is revealed to us as the great designer. And as I did last week, I want to go back and begin reading in verse number 1 and read through verse 13 just so that we can get a sense of the context and what Moses is teaching us here about our God. And so in Genesis chapter 1, in verse 1, it says, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And now the earth was formless and empty, and darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And God said, 'Let there be light.' And there was light. God saw that the light was good, and He separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness He called night. And there was evening, and there was morning the first day. And God said, 'Let there be a vault between the waters to separate water from water.' And so God made the vault and separated the water under the vault from the water above it. And it was so. And God called the vault sky. And there was evening, and there was morning the second day. And God said, 'Let the water under the sky be gathered to one place, and let dry ground appear.' And it was so. And God called the dry ground land, and the gathered waters He called seas. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, 'Let the land produce vegetation, seed-bearing plants and trees on the land that bear fruit with seed in it, according to their various kinds.' And it was so. The land produced vegetation, plants bearing seed according to their kinds, and trees bearing fruit with seed in it according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning the third day." One commentator reading through Genesis chapter 1 noticed an order of design, not only in God's creative work, but also in Moses' literary artistry in describing it. In other words, Moses was very careful to portray God as a God of careful order and careful design, and Moses sought to communicate that even in the way that he wrote the passage. So, for example, this commentator noted that there is, throughout Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, through chapter 2, verse 3, which ends the seventh day of creation, that within that passage, there is a remarkable number of occurrences of the number seven. Obviously, we have the 7 days of creation, and that is clear. But there are a number of other occurrences of the pattern of seven as well. He noticed that the word for God, Elohim in Hebrew, the word for God is used exactly 35 times. 5 times 7. He noted that the word for earth or land, the Hebrew word eretz, occurs exactly 21 times, 3 times 7 in the passage. When the words for heavens and the firmament or the vault, when they're combined, they occur 21 times, 3 times 7. In the account of the first day, the terms for light and day are found 7 times. There are 7 references to light in the fourth day. Water is mentioned 7 times in the second and third days. And the phrase, "it was good," occurs 7 times. The first verse in Hebrew has 7 words. The second verse in Hebrew has 14 words. The 7th paragraph, which is the 7th day, contains 3 consecutive sentences that are each 7 words. In the middle of those three sentences is the expression, the seventh day. Now, when you put all that together, it seems hard to say that that was all coincidental. All of these repetition of the pattern of seven. And now, why am I saying that? I'm not saying that to say that there's some code in the Bible that we have to figure out. That's not what I'm saying. But I think what Moses was doing is Moses, even in the writing of it, even in the description of the account under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, was careful to portray God as a God of order and a God of design. And that even comes through in the way that Moses framed the passage itself. And so the overriding idea in this passage is that God is a God not only of power, who can bring everything into existence just by the sheer word of his voice, but also that he is a God of wisdom and a God of order who carefully plans and arranges everything that he does. Everything that he does with intentional design. Last Sunday, I noted the fact that God's orderly design is displayed by the distribution of his creative activity over six equal days. And last week we asked the question, you ever thought about why the most powerful being in the universe, the infinitely powerful God, didn't just say, let there be a universe, and there was a universe. Instantaneously, in a moment, a completed universe, fully perfect, all the way done, and it was so. Why did he create in stages progressively? I think it was so that he could reveal himself to us and show us his creative design. And that over the course of six successive days, that he would show us step by step, stage by stage, his power, his handiwork, and his orderly design. And so I'm convinced that Genesis chapter 1 is intending to teach us that God created the world in six literal days. Not six long, huge ages of unknown time, but six literal days. Six equal successions of morning and evening. And God completed all of his work. And that even that pattern of day after day, morning and evening, day one, day two, day three, all the way through the creation week, reveals that God is purposeful in what he does, and he's orderly in his design. We also noticed last week that God's orderly design is displayed by the separation of light and darkness. Before he fills the universe with the light-giving bodies. So he separates light and darkness before he creates the sun, the moon, and the stars. Last week we noted that there is an intentional symmetry in the 6 days of creation. That in the first 3 days, God is forming his unformed world. Genesis 1 verse 2 says that the earth that God formed was unformed and unfilled. It was without form and empty, it says in Genesis 1 verse 2. And so the image that Genesis 1 is picturing for us is of a God who created the matter, who created the clay. He brought into existence that which was not. And so out of nothing, he brought into existence the raw materials, and there is this world that is dark, and that is formless, and that is empty. And then like a master potter or a master craftsman, God is then molding and shaping and fashioning his world and building it with a sense of purpose and design. And so the first thing that he does in this unformed and unfilled world is he starts to make some separations. He starts to put things in their proper place. To give things their proper abode. And so what he does is he says, darkness, here's your sphere of activity. Light, here is your sphere of activity. And so God, by the sheer word of his power, speaks into existence, into a complete darkness, light. He says, let there be light, and there was light. Didn't need the sun, didn't need the moon, didn't need the stars. God's own glory illumined this universe. And then after creating that light, he carefully separates it and puts each of them into their spheres of activity so that we can have a regular pattern, a succession of evening and morning, day after day. Why? So that life can have rhythm, so that life can have timing, so that life can have rest. So there's a time for work, there's a time for rest. There's a time for work during the day when the light shines. There's a time for rest at night. And God built into his creative order rhythm and work and rest, and it was all purposeful. And so God did that. He separated the light and the darkness, and he's doing it all with his wisdom. And now tonight, what I want to do is I want to focus our attention on days 2 and 3, because in days 2 and 3, what God is specifically doing is he is taking his unformed world and he is forming it in preparation specifically for life. And so on day number 2, God's orderliness, his orderly design, is displayed by the separation of water and sky before he fills them with fish and birds. So day 1, he separates light and darkness. And on day 4, he will fill them with sun, moon, and stars. On day 2, he separates the waters vertically, the waters below from the waters above, so that on day 5, he can fill them with fish in the sea and birds in the air. And so God's orderliness is displayed by the separation of water and sky before he fills them with fish and birds. And so God is a wise builder, and he begins with the end in mind. Isn't that what someone does who begins building? They start with a plan, don't they? They start with a plan. They start with an intention. Before you lay a foundation for a house, you have blueprints, hopefully, right? There's a design. There's a plan of what you hope to accomplish. And so before you start forming, there's the end in mind. You know what the finished product is going to look like. And so God is a God of order. He is a God of purpose. And before he began his world, he knew what his purpose was. He knew what the climax of his creative work would be. And what is that? Day 6, the climax of God's creative work is people, human beings, made in the image of God. And we'll look at this later on as we go in Genesis 1. The only aspect of God's creation that is said to be made in the image of God is humanity. Human beings, you and me, we are made in the image of God. We are the crown of God's creative work. That's what Psalm 8 says. Psalm 8 says, "When I look to the skies, the heavens, when I consider the work of your hands, what is man? What am I as a human being that you would consider us, and yet you have made us a little lower than the angels, crowned with glory and honor," Psalm 8 says. And so that's what God's purpose was. And so if you think about it, everything that God is doing with the world, in separating light and darkness, in forming the atmosphere, the sky and the seas, and then in day 3, separating the seas and creating dry ground, all of that he is doing for living beings, so that he can create life and living beings and put them in this world that he is shaping. And the crown of that, the climax of that, is humanity. That God is going to take human beings made in his image and place them in this beautiful world that he has just made with his handiwork. And so God is doing it with purpose for his own glory. And so in this passage, in Genesis chapter 1, verse 6, we see God said, "Let there be a vault between the waters to separate water from water." This word vault is interesting. Literally, it has the idea of like a dome, some hard shell, like a spherical dome. And that was, in the ancient world, a way of understanding this thing that surrounded the world. But we know what this is talking about. We know that later on, God is going to call this sky. He's going to call it the heavens. And what is he going to put into this thing, this vault? Later on day 5, he's going to put birds into it. And so we know that what this is talking about the sky, the atmosphere. And so God is making a place where these living beings will live. He's separating the waters below from the waters above, and he's creating a living abode for birds. And below, he's creating a living abode for fish in the waters. Now, what are the waters above? There's been some debate in Genesis chapter 1 about that. What are these waters above? Some have suggested that this refers to some kind of ice or vapor canopy that surrounded the world that was there until the time of the flood. And then in the time of the flood, that vapor or ice canopy came down and produced the waters of the flood. And that would explain the great difference in ages of lifespans of people before the flood versus after the flood. That's one possibility. It's one explanation. And in terms of that theory, all I would have to say is, I'm not sure. There's really just not enough in the scriptures to say that that's so. I'm a little bit more inclined to suggest that the waters above are nothing other than the moisture in the atmosphere, that the clouds that are in the heavens, in the skies, in the place where the birds fly, the waters below from the waters above. And so I think that might be one possibility. And the reason I say that is because in Proverbs chapter 8, verse 27, it says, I was there, speaking of wisdom, I was there when he set the heavens in place, when he marked out the horizon on the face of the deep, when he established the clouds above and fixed securely the fountains of the deep. And so what's interesting in that wisdom is talking about being there at the very beginning of creation, and it references what God is doing on day two and mentions the fountains of the deep below and the clouds above. And so perhaps what day two is simply talking about is that God separated the waters below, the seas, from the waters above, that is the moisture in the atmosphere, in the clouds, and he's creating a place for birds to live, for his living beings to live that he's going to create. And so verse 7 says, so God made the vault and separated the water under the vault from the water above it, and it was so. And God called the vault sky, and there was evening and there was morning the second day. And so God is making a place for his living beings to live. And so God's orderly design is seen in that. And one of the things that I wanted to bring out tonight is the fact that each of these days of creation specifically goes against some polytheistic myth of one of Israel's neighbors. I just want us to think about that for a moment. Israel was surrounded by peoples and nations that were polytheistic, that is, worshipped many gods. And in those polytheistic religions, a lot of those religions have these ancient myths, ancient legends about how the universe was formed. And in many of those ancient religions and ancient myths, such as the Babylonian accounts or the Egyptian accounts, there is this struggle going on between these gods. And out of this struggle, the world is born. And it's interesting that what Genesis chapter 1 seems to be doing is in each day of creation, Moses seems to be going after, attacking one of these ancient gods that these pagan neighbors of Israel worshipped. Let me just give you an example. In the ancient Sumerian religion, the divine rule of the skies was particularly important. It was Anu, the sky god, and Enlil, the god of the atmosphere, who established and deposed the kings of the Sumerian city-states. So it's interesting that in these other ancient religions, the things that they worshipped, like the sky or the seas, the vastness of the ocean, or the sun or the moon, the things that they worshipped, Genesis chapter 1, Moses' presentation of the creation week is, no, these are not things to be worshipped. These are things that are made. God made these things. The one true living God of the universe made everything. There's no struggle between the gods. There's no world being born out of this struggle. No, there's only one will. There's one purpose. There's one design, and it is the design and purpose of the one true and living God of the universe. And so all of these polytheistic religions, they were worshiping that which is created instead of worshiping the Creator who is blessed forever, Paul says in Romans 1. We're familiar from our Old Testament reading the god Baal. In the Ugaritic religion, Baal is identified as, quote-unquote, the rider in the clouds. And Baal was the god of storm and rain. But Israel's faith in Yahweh, the one true God, says that He is the source of heaven's powers because He is the sole creator of heaven and earth. And so the heavens and the earth were not created as some cosmic struggle between Marduk and Tiamat, as the Babylonian myths suggest. No, God spoke the heavens and the earth into existence by the word of His power. And it was all very good. The sky is His. This vault that He made, this atmosphere, the sky, it's His because He made it with the word of His power. The seas, they're His because He made them with the word of His power. And so He owns them. And so God is demonstrating His authority over what He has made. And He calls it sky. And so in this, we see God's orderly design. We also see God's orderly design in the fact that God separated the waters not only vertically, like this, waters above from waters below, but also on day three, we see God doing a separation this way, in which He is drawing the waters back and He is revealing the dry ground underneath. And so in Genesis 1 verse 9, God said, "Let the water under the sky be gathered to one place and let dry ground appear." And it was so. And God called the dry ground land, and the gathered waters He called seas. And God saw that it was very good. And so here's our third separation. The first 3 days of creation have had three separations in which God is bringing form and order to His unformed world. He separates light from darkness. He separates waters below from waters above. And now on day three, He's separating waters this way so that He can reveal dry ground. And what's He making a place for this time? He's making a home for animals and for you and me on day three. He's separating the waters. He's bringing dry ground and vegetation into the world to give us, you and me, and animals a place to live. And so God is doing everything purposefully. One of the things that I think is important for us to think about, and one of the reasons why Genesis is so foundational, is that if God can do this, then He can do any other miracle that is recorded in the Bible. How many times have you heard that of people doubting, being skeptical of miracles that are recorded in the Bible? Well, all of that skepticism is swept away. All of that denial is swept away when we look up to the skies, as the psalmist did in Psalm 19, and he sees the handiwork of God. And once you see the handiwork of God and God's glory and His power displayed in the things that He has made, nothing is impossible for God. If God can take the waters of this newly formed world and He can say, "Let dry ground appear," and these waters go like this, and ground appears underneath them, then it's no big deal for God to say to a whole multitude of Israelites fleeing Pharaoh out of Egypt to say, "Seas, part." And they part, and dry ground appears, and they walk across. There are many, many people that have denied the miracle of the Exodus and said, "It's impossible, there's no way." And so there's all these different theories about how the Israelites crossed the Red Sea. And they said, well, they really didn't cross down here. They crossed up here, what was really shallow. And, you know, it's only 6 inches deep, and it wasn't the rainy season, and it was really shallow there. And so, it was, you know, they basically crossed in this muddy puddle, which doesn't really solve the problem, does it? Because then it's an even greater miracle that all of Pharaoh's army drowns in 6 inches of water, right? So you really can't get around the miracles of the Bible. And it all goes back to this fundamental principle of Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. We have to start there, don't we? That's where God started in His work. It's also where He started when He spoke to us through His Word. It is the first sentence of the Bible, and if we don't get that sentence right, we don't understand the rest of it at all. God is powerful. God owns it. God can do anything that He wants with His world because He made it. And so God's wisdom and design and power are being revealed to us in this passage. That's why it says in Romans 8:29 that wisdom was there when He gave the sea its boundary, so the waters would not overstep His command. And when He marked out the foundations of the earth, sounds like day three, doesn't it? Where He's setting the boundaries of the seas, He's establishing dry ground, wisdom was there. Then I was constantly at His side. I was filled with delight day after day, rejoicing always in His presence, rejoicing in His whole world and delighting in mankind. Wisdom was there with God in the beginning, which means that God built this universe with wisdom, with design, and with order, and with purpose for His glory. Verse 11 says, "Then God said, 'Let the land produce vegetation, seed-bearing plants and trees on the land that bear fruit with seed in it, according to their various kinds.' And it was so." Verse 12, "The land produced vegetation, plants bearing seed according to their kinds, and trees bearing fruit with seed in it according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning the third day." One important point in those few verses that I just read is that God is creating according to kind. And we'll see this with the fish and the birds and the animals and people as well. That God is creating according to kind. And those kinds are unique. God is making each kind individually. In other words, what I'm saying is one kind doesn't evolve out of another kind. God is making each kind. He's making the trees according to their kind, the grass according to its kind, fish according to their kind, birds according to their kind, animals according to their kind, and people in His image. God is doing it specially as His creative work. And it's all revealing His glory and His wisdom. In this passage, we see that the Creator of heaven and earth is a God of order and design, who prepares His newly created world before He fills it with life. Why does He produce vegetation? Vegetation is life, isn't it? But I thought life came in later. I thought in the first part of creation, He's just forming it, fashioning it, so that He can bring in life later. Well, biologically speaking, plants are life. But interestingly, from a biblical worldview, plants, vegetation, are never understood that way. Plants and vegetation are always understood in terms of the service that they provide for other living beings. And so why did God make the vegetation and the plants on day three? It's because they were there for food for the birds and the fish and the animals and people when He would make them later on days five and six. And so God is fashioning His world. He's preparing it in careful design, revealing who He is. A couple of applications that I want to make as we close our time together. One of the applications is this. To the extent that we wander from God, to the extent that we are far away from God, is the extent to which our world, our livelihood, our being becomes disorderly and chaotic. Why? Because God is a God of order and design. What happened, we'll read this later when we get to Genesis 3, But what happened when Adam and Eve wandered from God? Everything that was good, everything that was perfect, everything that was very good, God says at the end of day six, what happened? It started to decline, to degenerate, to become chaotic and disorderly, and death and disease and thorns and thistles and curse brought into that world. And so only in terms of our relationship with God, only in terms of our understanding, our purpose in relationship to Him, do our lives find purpose and order and design. And so if we are far away from God, for our neighbors and our friends that are unbelievers, that are far away from God, their lives are always going to be lacking something in terms of order and purpose and fulfillment and quenching their thirst. And it will always be lacking until they find their Creator, until they find salvation through the Lord Jesus Christ, the Word of wisdom who brought all this into being. And so our world needs order and design and purpose. And the way that we find it is through our Creator and through His revelation. And the other application that I want us to think about is that since we are His people made in His image, that we, in a finite way, in a small way, should reflect this purpose and desire for design and wisdom and orderliness. And so in the things that we do, whether it be in our homes, maintaining our homes and building and fixing things, and in our jobs, in maintaining things or designing things, we as believers in the Lord Jesus Christ should seek to emulate our great God and seek to bring order and design to His world. And as He did, bringing order out of disorder and bringing form out of that which was unformed, we should seek to follow in His image and do the same. And so let's use our creative talents. Let's use our abilities. Let's use the wisdom and the minds that God has given to us to bring order and design into our world. And let's do it all for His glory. 1 Corinthians 10:31 says, whatever you do, even eating, even drinking, whatever you do, do it all to the glory of God. And so in your home, in your workplaces, in your neighborhoods, in your community, God, I believe, desires for Christians to be people who bring order into disorder. And one of the reasons I say that is because He's called us to be light, right? He's called us to be light. Let your light shine in the darkness. Just like what God did on day number one, in a world of darkness, He said, let there be light. So now we, as His people, are His light in a dark world. And so let's bring order. Let's bring wisdom. Let's bring design. Let's bring logic. Let's bring good words. Let's bring... Christians should be the best everything. Christians should be the best artists, the best musicians, the best engineers, the best farmers, the best businessmen. Christians should be the best at everything to show who our great God is. God of order and purpose and design, who does things with excellence and with purpose. And so let's do that. Not for our glory, not so that we can receive a promotion or get a raise or receive accolades from people, but let's put our best effort into everything that we do and then deflect the praise to our God, who is a God of wisdom and order.